Busted appliance? This is your sign to upgrade. Shop at Lowe's to get up to 35% off and next day delivery on hundreds of major appliances. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 3/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Order by 4 p.m. Available Monday through Saturday. Subject to availability. Fees, exclusions, and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/appliance delivery for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CT&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Today's episode.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CT&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Episode of The Grave Talks is brought to you by Best Fiends. With over 100 million downloads and tons of five-star reviews, Best Fiends is a must-play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends. Today on The Grave Talks, reuniting with spirits. After experiencing a tragic loss at the age of 8, Tim Miley was left questioning his spiritual beliefs or belief that there was any rhyme or reason to life and death at all. As an adult, once he moved into his own home, Tim would soon discover that the other side was much closer than he thought. He began hearing noises, having experiences that led him down a path to paranormal investigating, leading him on a journey of reconnecting with the loved ones that not only he lost, but helping complete strangers find peace with their lost family members as well.
My interest in the paranormal is probably a little bit different than other people. I grew up in a household where we didn't really talk about the paranormal. Mm-hmm. My dad's family was very religious, and that kind of meant, you know, when you died, you either went to heaven or you went to hell, and there was no need to discuss it any further. I didn't notice the paranormal. I'll say I didn't notice. I probably was inundated or had experienced it, you know, most of my life, but I just never noticed it. Mm-hmm. Until I was 31 years old. I bought a home in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, here where I still live, and within a couple of weeks I had all these things happening. I had bangs on the wall, I had voices, I had footsteps, and I had no idea what was going on. And at the time I was in a very low place, personally, a very dark place personally. My dad passed away when I was very young, and we may touch on that later in the interview, but, I was scared. You know, I'm 6'4", 265 pounds. And the first thing I did was call my mommy and I never dealt with anything like that before. And here I was, you know, being forced to, and a lot of my family at that time said, it's your dad. He's coming back to watch over you. So 2006 is the very first time that I dealt with anything that I would consider paranormal, and it opened up an entire new world to me.
That's very interesting. Just for your reference, because I'm sure this will come up at some point, I can probably relate to you on a lot of local area things because I grew up in Fond du Lac. And I lived in Oshkosh for years, worked in radio there years ago. I'm in Fayetteville, Arkansas these days, but grew up in the Fox Cities. So
we were practically neighbors.
We were practically, yes. So we probably know many of the same haunting type things. And I was all about ghost stuff back then. I wasn't doing a show back then, but I was on FM radio, on stations like WIXX and WPKR and all that late 90s and early 2000s. But 2006, you get to this. This house, you're having these experiences, and you said you grew up in an environment where, you know, it really wasn't something that was talked about. It really just wasn't part of life. And unless you're having experiences as a child, and you grew up in a house like that, it's not going to be brought up. I mean, I have plenty of friends and family where that's exactly how it was. Their interest is very fleeting because they've never had experiences, and that's just the mindset as to what they were brought up around. So you kind of having that as your background, and then in 06, starting to have these experiences in this house that you got, what is going through your mind initially? I know you said you called your mom right away, but personally to you, how are you processing this? What are you thinking?
I'll be honest with you. I thought I was going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was losing my mind. Being in a place where I was really in a deep state of depression at the time, so that didn't help. Mm-hmm. And just dealing with that and trying to process what was happening in the house, and it was dumb luck. I'm a big pro wrestling fan. I think that makes me a little bit weird for most people, but I've watched pro wrestling since I was a kid.
Sure.
And it was just a chance for me to get away, to go into this other world and just forget about everything that was happening in mine for an hour or two. And I happened to be watching wrestling one night, and it was on the Sci-Fi Channel at that time. And on came this commercial for Ghost Hunters. Mm-hmm. And this is how naive I was to all of this. I had no idea there were shows like that. I had no idea there were people that went around and looked for this stuff.
Sure.
So I immediately set the DVR, fell in love with the concept, fell in love with the fact that there were people out there that were willing to help me. Mm-hmm. And then they started talking about Tapp's family members, mm-hmm, and Tapp's family teams. And I did some research, and I contacted a few teams in Wisconsin, and to my surprise, none of them got back to me. I was not worth any of their time. But it turned out to be a great thing, because had they got back to me and had they come into my house and explained everything, I wouldn't have pushed forward, and I wouldn't have done my own research, and I wouldn't have educated myself, and I wouldn't be in the position I am today. And that position is I get to help a lot of families in Wisconsin, and that's the thing I take most pride in.
Sure. So tell me about that. Tell me about that journey as you began to have to essentially investigate this stuff on your own, because the people you're reaching out to are not reaching back out to you. What do you do? It's got to feel a little bit helpless and a little bit daunting at first, but what do you do to dig into that?
I didn't know where to start, so I wouldn't use my experience as a template. But I went ahead and I found all the documentaries I could. I watched a lot of the TV shows. I started listening to a lot of paranormal radio. I read books that I could get my hands on, and I just tried to absorb as much information as I could. Mm-hmm. And it really was never about starting my own team. It was about my own sanity. Mm-hmm. And explaining to myself what was happening in the house. And as I became more comfortable with the idea of the paranormal and the activity that was happening in my home, I started talking to friends at work. I started talking to family members about what was happening, because even back in 2006, 2007, a lot of times when you bring that subject up, they look at you like you got something hanging from your face.
Yeah.
It's much more accepted now, and that's a wonderful thing. But back then, not so much. You're really playing a game with your reputation there if you brought it up. About a year into trying to educate myself, like a light bulb went off, and I said, you know, if there's families out there that are looking for help, they're probably not getting their emails answered either.
Yeah.
You know, there should be somebody out there that's willing to help them. And that's really how Fox City's paranormal team became a thing. In January 7th of 2008, we had our first meeting, and I'm the only person that remains from that first meeting, which is probably a good thing because I'm a bit controlling. So, over the course of the last 12 and a half years, we've had the chance to work with a lot of fantastic people. I owe a lot to people like Todd Arnold, who runs the team with me. Mm-hmm. since about 6 months into this whole journey. Todd's been by my side the entire time. And then people like Tony Macario, and you know, there's been countless people that have been a part of this team and then left for various reasons, you know, families, you know, starting a family, a new job. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that goes into this, and people don't really understand that. It's very time consuming. We ask a lot of your time, and we're all giving up time away from our family and friends and trying to help people we don't know. So I can't do an interview without thanking all the people that have been a part of Fox City's paranormal team. They've helped us get to this point, and they've made me look very good, and I get to do things like this. I get to talk with you on the radio.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, it's just the expansion of what has happened over the years in really every state, as far as what the paranormal investigative crews look like today as opposed to 2006. In 06, I lived in a small apartment off of Bowen Street. Actually, it was more about 2005, I think, is when I was there in Oshkosh. And prior to that, I was in Wausau. And in Wausau is where I had initially contacted Chad Lewis, who's big into paranormal in Wisconsin. And then when I was in Oshkosh, I actually got a chance to meet up with him in Appleton, and we went and investigated a cemetery where there's the Kate Blood gravestone, and walked through there at night with a mini disc recorder, because that's what you used in 2005 to record things digitally, and had one hell of an experience there. But it was tough. I mean, it was nowhere near as, there weren't as many in terms of volume of people that were out there that were really doing this seriously and could help. I mean, I think a lot of them, honestly, at that time were getting inundated with requests. There was far more people that had interest and had stuff going on than there was people to give any sort of answers or help with any direction. So it's awesome to see that all these years later, a lot of people all kind of got together and said, I'm having stuff too. Let's try and figure out not only our own situations, but others as well, so everybody doesn't feel so damn crazy. I remember the feeling odd. I would, this show that we do now, it was initially kind of, it was created back there in the Fox Cities, well before podcasting was a thing. Every once in a while, not just Halloween, I would do Fox Cities ghost stories on 99.5 WPKR in the evenings. I did the night show there. And I don't know, probably like once a month, far more than you should bring up on a country radio station, ghost stories. I would do it. I just open the lines for a night, and then people would share their ghost stories between me playing Tim McGraw. So heard all sort of very interesting kind of small tidbits of this and that all over the state. So tell me more about, as you're digging into this house and the strange things that you're hearing and experiencing in your initial case, if you will, what are you finding? What are you using to find evidence? And what did you find in 2006 of the noises in that house?
I never actually investigated my own house.
No?
I did a lot of research here, and along the way, I just resigned myself to the fact that this is my dad, and I started talking to him.
Okay.
Just as though he was there, and just got comfortable to the point where, you know, this is dad, and whatever else is here is fine. Once I started doing research into the paranormal, I realized that what was happening in my house was very tame, very mild, compared to what other people are experiencing. And real quick, you're going to love this. The last case we did, a residential case in Oshkosh, was on Bowen Street. So we'll probably have to talk after the show is done.
Sure.
It just got to a point where I was comfortable enough. Our very first case was in February of 2008 and was actually a family member. And I'm grateful for that, because I also don't recommend that you start out with a residential case, because there are so many things at that time that I did not know. And if I'm being honest, 12 and a half years later, so many things I still have to learn. This is a never ending process. Mm-hmm. And if you stop learning, I think the field just goes right by you. But we were able to go into that house, didn't mess up things too badly. Things went well, and really got the ball running and or ball rolling. And we had two cases in the first 6 months of existence. And then we got a couple of cases in the area, and word of mouth, you know, people would say, hey, these guys aren't so bad. You know, they're going to do their best to take care of you and help you all they can. And then we got a call in 2010 about a case that ended up on Paranormal Witness, and everything blew up for us. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, we're doing about 20 of these a year. And, you know, life changed a lot once that Paranormal Witness episode aired, and I wasn't ready for that. I didn't expect that. For some reason, I thought I would still be in my own little world, my own little bubble. And when it aired, I was getting messages from people that I had watched on TV, mm-hmm. and from people within the paranormal, and it was crazy.
Back to our conversation in just a moment. First, I want to thank our supporter today of the Grave Talks. It is Best Fiends. You know, ghost stories and the stories that we share on this program, very much like a puzzle. Every single time you hear it, you're trying to connect dots, trying to figure out the big picture. How is this happening? Why is this happening? Put all of that together and try and make some sense of it. Best Fiends, if you like puzzles, is an awesome game to play on your phone. It's a great app. I love just kind of getting out on the porch when I want to take a break, and I just pick it up, and it's my mental palate cleanser. I've been saying that for quite some time, but it really is. But it still challenges your brain. I find I always need to be doing something. And whether that's actually working on the shows, whether that's working on things here around my farm, whether that is just sitting down taking a break, I'm not one that's good at just not actively using my mind. So Best Fiends is something I can do. Still challenges me, but still makes me feel like I'm just kind of like, all right, this is good. This is fun. And I love it. It's a great puzzle adventure game. You can experience it anytime, anywhere. You don't even need Wi-Fi or internet access. So if you're at a place without it, boom, you can pull it up. You can still play it. I absolutely love it. I got friends all over the country who are also playing it as well. It's a great thing because you can be distant from someone. You can socially be distant from someone and still have some social distant competition going on with your friends. That's what I love about it. Family, friends, whoever it is. Right now, there is over 100 million downloads on this game. So you don't want to miss out on the Best Fiends craze. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you don't know what it's all about, download it. See for yourself why so many people are so into this game. There are tons of cool characters to collect. It's just awesome how often they update this thing. It never gets boring. New monthly themed challenges. Best Fiends has thousands of levels already, with new levels, events, and characters added every month. It's hours of fun right at your fingertips. You can even play offline. Over 100 million downloads and tons of five-star reviews, Best Fiends is a must-play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Friends without the R, Best Fiends. Tell me, let's take a step back before you even got to that first house that you investigated. How did you essentially kind of check the box for yourself mentally to feel confident enough to say, okay, I'm ready to go into someone else's house, to go into someone else's, you know, residence without having, you know, a lot of times people jump into this having, you know, almost apprenticed, if you will, underneath another team or were with another team. You not having necessarily that opportunity, but you doing all the research on your own to the point of saying, okay, I think I have some knowledge here. I think I can help people. What did you do to get up to that point, to that confidence level to say, I want to go into your house and I'm going to do my darndest to try and help you?
I wish I had a good answer for you, but I think it was just blissful ignorance.
Yeah.
For some reason, once I started researching all of this stuff, I just had this ultimate confidence that, if we were going to do this, then there were going to be families that were going to count on us. And I had to do my very best and just be over-prepared. Mm-hmm. And, I guess, so going into that first investigation, just over-preparedness and, confidence in the people around me. And the fact that it was a family member made it a little bit easier. There wasn't quite as much pressure there. But doing that first investigation gave me even more confidence in the mission, mm-hmm. That we wanted to accomplish. And you know, from day one, it's been all about helping as many families as we can. I'm not the guy to talk to if you want to talk about well-known haunted sites all around the country, because a lot of them I have not been to.
Sure.
My focus has always been on families, mm-hmm. and that's kind of our calling card, and I'm proud of that.
And those are some of the most interesting cases to me. We talk on this show, on the Grave Talks, to folks who some of the most well-known hauntings, you know, ever, Amityville, Conjuring, you name it. But, and those are very compelling. I mean, some of those I've been drawn to since I was a little, you know, little kid, specifically Amityville, and to be able to talk to some of the people who were firsthand witnesses to it is very compelling. But oftentimes it's these small stories that may not, and I say small in terms of their publicity, not in terms of what happened within the case. A lot of times people don't want to be known. They don't want their story out there. Or if it does get out there, they don't want anybody to know who it is or where it is. You can tell the story, but that's it. No evidence as to where this actually happened. Those to me are sometimes some of the scariest, most compelling stories that are out there. And then inevitably, then once we air it, then we get calls on our end from every TV producer going, can you give me the lead on who that is? Because we'd love to use that in an episode of this show. And my answer is usually probably not, unless they really want it to, because I can usually know firsthand if they already wanted it to be out there or not. Tell me about this before you get to going in and doing the investigating, being brought up with a belief system that really, you know, wasn't paranormal friendly, for lack of any other better way to say it. Did you have to do any sort of internal reckoning with your belief system to really accommodate this, to take it into a level of seriousness, to take it into a level of inquisitiveness where you're not too scared to go and dive into this because of what it could be, or to take it at a serious level where, shit, this stuff is going on for people? I mean, how did you reckon with that, or was that almost kind of out of you by the time you started investigating?
I kind of got to go backwards and explain, you know, where a lot of this came from.
Yeah.
I was raised Lutheran.
Okay.
Until the age of 8.
Yep.
And that's when my dad, unfortunately, while putting out cones at my elementary school, got hit by a construction vehicle.
Oh, wow.
And ended up being in a coma for 6.5 years, mm-hmm. passed away from the injuries when I was 15. Mm-hmm. I gave up religion. I gave up believing in a higher power at that point. Mm-hmm. My thought as a young child was, you know, what kind of God takes away my father?
Sure.
So I was angry. I didn't want anything to do with organized religion. I didn't want anything to do with talking about anything with that whatsoever.
Yeah.
And it's very strange because the paranormal field brought me back to belief, brought me back to spirituality.
Yeah.
And believing in that higher power, and all things happen for a reason. I wish it would have happened a different way. It's really strange when I tell people this, but I have a better relationship with my dad now that he's gone than I ever had when I was a kid, because I'd only knew him till the age of 8. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of friends that are mediums, and it was kind of a running gag for me when I would go to events. I would talk to my dad and say, hey, this medium here, is he or she for real? And I would say, hey, you know, have him give me this message. And 9 times out of 10, they did. And it was incredible. And it was a game for me and my dad, and I loved it. But I digress. Mm-hmm. So getting into this, it wasn't necessarily – I wasn't conflicted in my beliefs, because at the time I really didn't have many.
Sure.
So, you know, the paranormal field – and this is going to sound hokey as hell, but the paranormal field has made me a better person. Mm-hmm. It's made me care about people other than myself. And I'm thankful every day that all of this happened. You know, it's wild and crazy how everything has happened, but
yeah.
But getting into the paranormal field, like I said, I grew as a person, and everything I read about and everything I watched and just soaked in as much as I could, brought me back to that point where I was comfortable in saying, okay, this happened for a reason. We got to move forward. And this is what I'm supposed to do with my life.
Yeah. That's a great answer to the question. And it's very interesting to hear your story on that. And I can relate in some ways too, where it has made me more spiritual as well. I also brought up Lutheran. I did not have a tragedy like you went through, and I totally understand how you would feel. That makes total sense. I would probably have done the exact same thing. I just kind of naturally moved away from it in general. Just kind of like, I don't know. I just didn't necessarily believe in organized religion. And I don't necessarily know how much I do, honestly, to this day, but I believe there's something out there. And you don't necessarily need to go to the building on a certain day of the week to have that in your life. But it has certainly made me go, having heard all these stories and everything, to go, there is, it's taken me from that young 20s of there is no anything to there's certainly something. There's certainly something going on here, because there's no way all these people are having these experiences. And more so, I'm trying to find answers. And I know I'm going to always end up, by the time I'm dead, with more questions than answers. But certainly many more stories than I otherwise would never have heard. I can relate on the better person thing too, just being able to share these stories. And inadvertently, I started doing this, the other podcast, Real Ghost Stories Online, just to hear stories for entertainment and see how that goes. And just because I like the topic, but it turned out it ended up being like group therapy for the paranormally affected, as we've joked, just because people are able to get their stories out and not feel alone. And that, to me, is what drives my interest in this more than anything, is helping folks not feel alone, because so many have these stories. And the more people talk about it, the easier it becomes for everyone who has one of these things to come out and say, look, I got this going on too, and I'm not crazy. Tell me more about when you jumped into that first investigation. It was a family member. What were you investigating? What were they reporting to you, and what did you find?
They were reporting that they thought it was a family member at the time. That she thought it was her brother. That's what we went in to investigate. They had they had doors opening. They had footsteps happening. Again, very mild and probably a great time to do our first investigation. And that night, you know, being novices, we did mess up. We had a door open, and on the audio you can hear the latch actually open, and you could see the door open, but our camera placement was not the best, and it never really is. Even 12 and a half years later, we don't seem to get anything on camera. But we sat there and watched this door open, and it was pretty incredible. It was pretty amazing. But just trying to investigate what you think is your uncle, you have to remove yourself from it emotionally.
Sure.
And for the rest of the team members, they didn't have that problem. But it was a good first investigation. And like I said, not a whole lot went wrong. After we were there, they did report that the power tools would randomly go on and off in the basement. And just basically told them to, you know, have a discussion with what excuse me, with whatever was in the basement. Easy for me to say.
Sure.
And asked them not to do that. And they didn't have it happen after that. Like I said, a very mild, I don't like using the word haunting, I guess, very mild activity in the home. And we were able to document a little bit of that and move us forward as a team.
What was your reaction to finding out that sometimes just the most simple of actions of saying to someone, just reason with it, just say out loud, like you were talking to them as if they were alive and standing in the room, ask them to stop doing something, that is one of the most effective tools in dealing with the paranormal. To me, when I learned that, or when people started saying that on the show, I was shocked. I was always, you know, I grew up on unsolved mysteries. I grew up on all that sort of stuff. And so when it was always presented, it was like investigators came in and they did this and that, and they brought the priest in. And then, you know, you're expecting there to have to be this whole hoopla and dog and pony show to get something accomplished. But sometimes it's not anywhere near that to communicate or deal or reason or live comfortably with the dead.
It's pretty wild, isn't it? You know, the simplest of things. And I relate it to when I first started talking to my dad, and the fact that I could just sit and have, you know, a one-sided conversation, because I can't hear him talk back. But there are so many times when I just sit and talk to my father. So I try to relate it in the most compassionate way I can to the family. And that's another aspect of paranormal investigation that some teams need to get a little bit better at, in my opinion. We have to have compassion for that client. They've gotten to the point where it's bad enough in their home that they're willing to bring in four strangers and let them walk around in their house for a weekend.
Yeah.
you know, that's pretty incredible that, you know, that's where they are in their life, where they're willing to let people that have never been in their home, they don't know, come in and try to talk to, you know, loved ones, people that used to live there, spirits that have passed, and whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Just being able to give them hope, you know, in saying, hey, just reason with it. Mm-hmm. And having it work. I mean, it's like I said, it's pretty wild. It's crazy to think that we're able to do that. You know, 12 and a half years later, it's kind of become something that I don't even think about.
Sure.
You know, until you ask that question, it's like, it's just become old hat, you know? But when, you know, when you first start giving that advice, I think there is a moment when you step back and go, you know, am I doing the best I can for this family, or am I just repeating something that I've heard and trying to kind of walk my way through this?
What were some of the mistakes that you made early on, have maybe not even early on, but just mistakes that you've made over the years, you know, inadvertently? Obviously, you're trying your best to help these folks, but have you ever looked back on something and said, you know, maybe I should have done something a different way or a different approach to the investigating or trying to communicate with something?
I am so critical of my own work that I think there's not a case that goes by that I don't look back and go, I could have done that differently. Mm-hmm. But I guess the biggest one for me is it took a long time for my brain to process the fact that, okay, that there may not be anything happening, or there might not seem like there's anything happening tonight. But we truly don't know that until we listen to the audio back or watch the video. And there have been a lot of cases where I think internally I've given up. Mm-hmm. And you go back and you listen to the audio and, you know, holy crap, you know, we have all these voices that were trying to communicate with us. And here I was, you know, giving it 3/4 effort because I was just ready to pack everything up and go home. And, but yeah, there's little things on every case, every investigation, not the night of, but when I'm listening to the audio, I'll hear myself say something and I'll cringe and I'll go, why did I say it that way? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just little things like that. And we're never going to be perfect. You know, this isn't an exact science. But like I said, those people are counting on us. They bring us into their home and they're looking for answers. So you want to do the best you can for them.
Tell me about the paranormal witness case or the episode that you were involved in. How did that end up getting the attention of the television series? How did that relationship and how did that investigation begin with you?
All started in 2010. We got called into a home in Chilton, which if you lived in Fond du Lac, like, you know where Chilton is.
Yes.
Got called into a home in Chilton. Actually worked on that case for 2 years. And just you become a part of their family. Mm-hmm. And the gist of the case, and I'm not going to like, I'll give you the short version.
Okay.
There was a little boy. He was 2 years old, was put into foster care in 1967. A week or two after he was put into foster care, he was rushed to the hospital and pronounced dead. And they ruled it strenuous child's play. So 1967, this happened. So we get called in 2010. So 43 years later, this family is seeing this little boy, hearing this little boy. And then they're also seeing and hearing an older man, an older gentleman. They start doing some research on the home and they find out that there was a boy that was, you know, obviously I told you already, there was a boy that was murdered in the home in 1967. And like I said, they originally found it to be strenuous child's play. In 2005, the case got reopened by his biological siblings, and it was now ruled a homicide. Mm-hmm. And that the foster father was the one that had actually molested and murdered this little boy. It was a very, very sad situation.
Yeah.
Going into the first investigation there, we didn't know that last part. We just knew that there was a boy there and we didn't know exactly what happened to lead up to this.
Yeah.
We were called in. It was an emergency situation. We went in with very little research. During that initial investigation, we were told over audio to go home and also that a voice said murder in the basement. Mm-hmm. So we made plans to go in 2 weeks later. the client did a great service to us, did some research, found that newspaper article. In that newspaper article, they said that the boy's name was Walter Kristen, and he went by Chris. So that night, we tried to do whatever we could to make him comfortable, because this is a two-year-old boy. I'm a pretty big guy. You want to make yourself as less threatening as you can, because you just got to treat these spirits as if they're people. And if you walk up to a two-year-old boy and you're towering over him, he's not going to talk to you.
Yeah.
So we did everything we could to make him trust us, and that was big for us. And that night I asked him, do you want us to call you Walter? Do you want us to call you Chris? And we actually have audio of a little boy saying, my name is Chris. And that was the single most heartbreaking piece of audio I've ever listened to in my life. And just knowing that, he was there and all that he had gone through, because we knew the story now. Fast forward to, I believe, April of 2012. It's been a long time, so the timeline kind of escapes me sometimes. Sure. But I had just started doing paranormal radio, and the owner of the radio station, his name was Scotty Rourke, pretty well-known medium here in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And Scotty and I started talking, and I'd heard all these great things about Scotty and how fantastic he was as a medium. So I took a shot in the dark. We had never worked with a medium before, because a lot of the mediums I had met up until that point, I didn't trust a whole lot.
Sure.
But I started asking Scotty if he'd help us on this residential case, and he immediately said yes. He said, I don't want to know anything more, don't tell me anything, just give me your address. He came over to my house, and it was that night that I learned that it really truly was my father in my home. Mm-hmm. But we got done eating and we sat in the living room, and he looked at me and he said, your dad wants me to tell you something, but I'm not sure he wants me to tell you in front of everybody. And it was just my team members, and they're like family to me. And he said, your dad's upset you told him to leave. And there was a night where my dog was scared, and I looked to my left and I said, dad, it's okay. I'm going to be all right. You can go now. Mm-hmm. Biggest lie I ever told my dad in my life. But, anyway, getting back to the story, we went from Oshkosh to Chilton. No matter which way you go around Winnebago, it's about 45 minutes.
Sure.
So we're on our way, and, my co-founder Todd is in the back seat with Scotty, and Scotty is mapping out the house on his knee and telling us where everything had happened, where we need to be. And Todd is not responding, but I can tell something big is happening in the back seat, but I'm driving. We get to the home, and he takes us to the exact spots where we had the activity. And that night, Scotty did transmediumship, which if I had not been there, I wouldn't believe. But we were able to speak to Chris, and it was an amazing experience. One of only two spirits we've ever helped cross over. And I guess it was probably about 4 or 5 months later, I got a call from Scotty, and he said, hey, I got a call from Raw Entertainment. They want to know if there's any cases, residential cases, that I would recommend for their show. Mm-hmm. And he said, I gave him your name. Just talk to him.
Sure.
And it took a long time for me to even agree to that, because it's never really been about TV for me.
Yeah.
It's, after doing some soul searching and talking to the family, because I would have never done it without their blessing.
Yeah.
I decided, I want Chris's story to be told.
Sure.
I want people to know about this little boy. So we agreed to do the show, and there was a lot of exaggeration on the final product.
Sure.
But they kept their promise, and they told his story, and they kept it intact. So I was happy with that. But it was an experience. I don't want to be too down on the experience, but it was a process, and I tried to stick to my guns and keep the integrity of that investigation and Chris's story. I'm glad it happened, because it opened up a lot of doors for us. Like, mm-hmm. I said, all of a sudden people thought we were legitimate. I thought we were pretty okay before all of that. But it opened up doors, and it helped us help a lot more families in the Wisconsin area. And, mm-hmm. and for that, I'm grateful.
That wraps up the first part of our interview with paranormal investigator Tim Miley of Fox City's Paranormal. In the second half of our conversation, we're going to ask Tim what happened to the ghost of the child that was murdered in a home in 1967. What is Tim's goal on an investigation such as the case of a murdered child? What is a little boy crossing over to do once he crosses over? And why would he be lingering for so long? Was the murderer of the little boy actually cohabitating in the same house, causing continued unmeasurable anxiety throughout that home for 40-some years? Also, Tim mentioned that he had a better relationship with his father since he had passed on. Does Tim believe his father is helping him from the other side investigate the paranormal? We'll discuss all that and more in part two of our conversation with Tim Miley. To hear it become a Gravekeeper, that's a supporter of our program. To do so, go to patreon.com/thegravetalks or thegravetalks.com and click Become a Gravekeeper. For $5 a month, you'll get access to all of our interviews, every single episode, part one and part two, hundreds of them to binge away on, as well as advanced episodes of the program you get access to weeks before they're released to the public. You're also keeping our show on the air. This is a listener-supported show. $5 a month does that and keeps it going. Check it out at patreon.com/thegravetalks or thegravetalks.com and click Become a Gravekeeper. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
We'll be right back. Are you a fraud-paying American? One in four tax-paying Americans has been a victim of identity fraud. With LifeLock, if your identity is stolen, they fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Last year, billions in refunds were stolen. Could be from your salary, overtime, or second job. Gone. But this year, you don't need to stay a victim. Because this tax season, fraud-paying American is something no American should have to claim. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.